From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when Steve Jobs was in charge of Apple. His company was creating new products that were literally changing the daily habits of millions of people. And so it was probably natural to assume that Steve Jobs' kids were technology junkies. The New York Times reported that the reality was quite different. A journalist had asked Jobs if his kids loved the new iPad. "They haven't used it," Jobs replied, adding, "We limit how much technology our kids use at home." Well, the world gasped. This would be like Henry Ford saying his kids preferred a horse and buggy to get around. And yet, the Times found that a number of technology executives were doing the same, seeing the possible dangers and limiting technology use and screen time at home. Which brings us to this past Monday. Maybe you saw the headline on NPR.org. Apple aims to help parents crack down on kids' iPhone use. I will read now from the NPR story. Quote, Apple on Monday announced a new app to allow users to get reports on how much their kids are using particular apps on their iPhones and iPads. Apple is calling the app Screen Time, and it will let parents set time limits on how long their children can use apps, from Netflix to Snapchat. Screen Time would allow parents to limit access to some apps and websites. One option is designed to get kids to unplug from their devices at bedtime. The new feature will be part of the next Apple mobile operating system, iOS 12, which is expected out later this year. End quote. And that has us wondering, do you set limits for yourself or for your kids now? How do you do that? And what do doctors think of these changes? What are some of the national guidelines and recommendations we're seeing? A lot to talk about this hour. My guests today include Dr. Elizabeth Murray, a pediatrician at Golisano Children's Hospital. Dr. Murray, welcome back to the program.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
And Dr. Steve Cook is a pediatrician at Golisano Children's Hospital as well, who is hanging in there for us. How are you feeling?
I'm hanging in there. Thanks, Evan.
You didn't say great. You've been better.
I'm very close to great.
He's a doctor who's sick. Okay. Great. Thank you, Dr. Cook. And on the line with us is Dr. Dipesh Navsaria, who is an associate professor of pediatrics at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. And Dr. Navsaria, thanks for taking the time to the program. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Better than Dr. Cook, I think.
It sounds it.
let me go around the room, and I'll start with Dr. Murray on this. You know, Apple coming out saying that they're going to try to give parents a little bit more power here, to set some limits here. And just generally speaking, is it about time? Is it enough? How do you feel about it?
Well, first, I think it's important to remember, as parents, we've always had the power, right? Isn't that one of the... That's Wizard of Oz, right? You always had the power.
Yeah.
You know, we all have the original...
Your child does not need a cell phone.
We have the original app. It's called a timer. So I think I probably am a little bit more down on this concept than perhaps some other people are, because I think that it's incredibly hard to be a parent. I know it's incredibly hard to be a parent. And I think that technology is actually offering a lot of great opportunities, but boy, are there a ton of pitfalls. And as parents, we're navigating those pitfalls with our kids together. And that's just it. We got to still be in this together. If it's calling attention to it, I think it's great. If it's reminding parents about setting limits, and that, or if parents sometimes feel like they need an out, you know, there's a lot of times in kids' life where you're hearing no from your parents, especially as you get into the teenage years. And so if it's kind of helping them put those barriers in, but it's not really 100% your parents doing it, the phone is shutting off, or it's telling you, it's if it's giving the parents an extra resource to do that, to control things, then I think it's good. But I just want to make sure that we're all still actively involved and paying attention to what our children are paying attention to.
Am I allowed to ask you, your kids are how old?
Almost 2 and almost 9.
Almost 9. So does the almost 9-year-old say, I want my own cell phone, I want... like?
She does, because she does have some friends. She has...
That's where it comes from, right? One sees a friend with it, and all of a sudden everybody wants it.
She has access to a deactivated phone that she can use some apps on. And she actually, to her credit, she's always been able to have it in her room, because she always has been very good about turning it off. But to her credit, the other day she said, I think it's time for me to not have this in my room at night.
Oh, wow. At the age of not yet 9.
That's really great. It was amazing. But then her 2-year-old sister was walking around, all of a sudden turned on a bunch of apps on the same device that I didn't even know were still working. But yet this almost 2-year-old was able to figure it out by herself and was happy as can be, sitting on the floor all of a sudden looking at it. And I said, oh, my goodness, what have you done?
Yeah. So I think about my 6-year-old, and I think about at least empowering him to have an honest conversation. I tell him, look, you can use this in certain ways, but if there's something called screen time, and too much is bad for you. And he's actually starting to internalize that. So at least having a direct conversation, I'm willing to do it. I mean,
most definitely. And you know, she's also a child who, left her own devices, will read for 3 hours a day as well, which is not necessarily so good for herself either, which is an interesting conversation to have.
That is... Okay. We're all envious of you, and you're going, well, a little too much reading. Okay. A little too much raw broccoli she wants to eat.
Oh, no,
okay.
That's never happened. Never happened.
All right, Dr. Cook.
Noodles and chicken fingers.
How do you feel about it, Dr. Cook?
It is a huge challenge that we're facing right now, and it's something that in modern times we can't comprehend in terms of how much media, social media, internet is invasive in our lives, how much it's there. I mean, is it analogous to when cavemen discovered fire? You know, I mean, this is changing so rapidly. I was talking to our student on the way over here before, and I remember saying when I was a kid, or when we had our first child 18 years ago, we took videos with a VHS recorder of her walking and taking her first steps and talking and stuff.
A what now?
A VHS.
Oh, it's a VHS recorder. It's like a reel-to-reel thing?
Yeah, something like that. One of those... You know, digital, not digital, actually, you know, a tape recorder.
Yes, exactly.
And would bring it to my parents so they could see her on the VCR. Now, I mean, the American Academy of Pediatrics, we tell families only let your kid, young child, be near a device if you're using it for FaceTime or screen time so they can see grandparents, not use it for talking. So, that, I mean, that's less than 20 years, and you have a dramatic influence of this. And so as a parent who, when we had our third child, I was 40... that's different than a parent who's having their first child and they're 20 and they've been indoctrinated with media and social media in their lives. So it is changing. It's always been hard to be a parent, and it's changing so rapidly. We don't know how fast things are changing. So I think it is a great opportunity, but it also has a lot of warnings and a lot of things that we're just starting to discover are potentially harmful.
And I will say, Dr. Cook, I mean, I'm going to keep Dr. Murray's admonition in mind this hour and going forward, that we already had this power to begin with, and we can say no. But given what Apple has to say about this, and in a moment I'll read a little bit more extensively about what Tim Cook and others are saying about this, are you applauding Apple this week, or how do you feel about it?
I think it's... I'm happy that they're having some progress, with the caveat that we still have to be vigilant. We still have to be the timer. We still have to be the observer, and it doesn't let us off the hook. And unfortunately, too many things, when it's presented as convenience, it's thought of as, okay, I can shirk my responsibility here. No, it's still there, if not more.
Okay. Sorry, I was just texting somebody. Steve said, me too. Dr. Namsaria, how do you view the news this week?
Yeah, you know, I agree completely with what my colleagues were saying before. You know, parenting is difficult. It's hard to do any sort of limit setting with children because their job is to push back, and our job is to set limits. I mean, these are the core tasks of childhood and the core tasks of parenting in many ways. So having tools that help us do that effectively, I don't think are bad things. I think it also points to, I hope, a recognition by companies like Apple that, you know, there's not necessarily 100% great outcomes from, you know, heavy device technology and screen use, and that they're taking some responsibility to at least help with that process. Now, having said all that, the job of parenting is still the job of parenting. You can't just say, well, here's these technical fixes now, and now I don't need to pay attention as a parent. Because the fact is that there's no bit of programming that is going to replace the job that a parent does, the guidance that we can provide. You know, we have a rule in my house that my children can't use devices in their bedrooms. It has to be in a public area of the house, like the living room or the kitchen or something like that. And we've had that rule from the get-go. My kids are now almost 15 and 16. And several years ago, my son found a video on YouTube that looked like a cartoon, but it was really a lot of, you know, adult language, et cetera. You know, he just innocently stumbled upon it. And I heard that, you know, from the other side of the couch. And I asked him what he was watching, and I looked at it, and, you know, I said, you know, this is actually not for kids. Could you switch to something else? Mm-hmm. And he did. He just kind of shrugged his shoulders and said, sure, you know, it wasn't a big deal to him. I wouldn't have had the chance to do that important job of parenting if he had been off somewhere. And there's really not an effective app that would have helped me, helped prevent that, but also helped me explain to him why it wasn't appropriate. You know, you can't, parenting is not something that can be done by a device. So the job of parenting is hard, but the job of parenting is also very important. So I view this as a tool to help us do that job in a increasingly complex, you know, technical landscape. But it doesn't remove that job from us.
Listeners, we've got a really good panel from a medical perspective and a parenting perspective. And if you want to share your thoughts on the limits you've put on your kids or maybe even on yourself, have you changed some of your habits? It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255. Or 263-WXXI if you're calling from Rochester, 263-9994. You can email us, connections@WXXI.org. Please do not do anything while driving to put yourself in risk. And you know, look, I got a new phone recently and discovered that there is a part of the technology of the phone that allows me, if I choose, to not be notified of incoming calls and texts when I'm driving. So I set that up, and then I had people telling me, what's the deal? It's going straight to voicemail. You know, how come? And I'm like, well, I was driving. And they say, well, that's stupid. I mean, it's amazing how many people will say, like, I was just trying to call you or text you. And I'm going, I'm driving. I've made the choice. And there's actual societal pressure to always be available. Always, always available at all times. And so I felt that even after just getting a new phone. And it's just so it's interesting. And I wonder, Dr. Murray, let's go around the table again. And let me ask about an important word here, which is addiction. For parents, let's start with not just ourselves, but let's talk about our kids. When do we start worrying that their screen time is actually an addiction?
If they're replacing other activities with it, or if they're truly feeling that they're not able to function appropriately throughout their day unless they're checking in or they're doing something. I mean, you know, especially for the teenagers, it's tough because there is a lot of pressure to make sure they understand what their peer groups are doing. And so, you know, there certainly is a space for some of these social apps to communicate with friends. But it can't be in lieu of having dinner together as a family or other things like that, or the need of I can't do X, which is important for daily functioning because I have to check in with Y first.
Okay, Dr. Cook.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. And I think the internet addiction piece also is what happens when you take it away? You know, I mean, like anything, when taken away and restricted for extended period of times, I mean, do they become really angry and surly and yell at you, or do they not give it to you? Is it, you know, does it lead to a lot of disruption? Then you got to wonder, all right, there is a tendency. I mean, one of the concerns of use of electronic media, especially in children under 10, that may be an age that's more susceptible to the repetitive kind of messaging and stuff in it that makes it much harder. I'll tell you, I have parents in the office who, yeah, they want to let their kid, you know, not run around the room and maybe use an app while they're in there. And I say, you know, please limit it to specific settings and times and be aware of what they're doing, because when they start using it a lot and you take it away, we get lots of behavior problems. I mean, the potential side effects related to behavior development, developmental delays and stuff is starting to emerge. And it's not pretty when these are things that are presented as supposedly good things for us.
So the side effects you seem to hint at, irritability, things like that, Steve?
Yeah, you have behavior problems. These kids and parents are having trouble with what might be normal toddler behavior, a kid who is independent, wants to climb on things, do things. Okay, give them an app, give them the tablet, let them watch a video and play on that. And then when you take it away, they start throwing a temper tantrum and the parent doesn't know what to do and gives it back to them. And so now they have lots of behavior problems anytime the parent wants to set limits. So like Liz was talking about, we try to set limits and then we lose our cachet there. The other piece of it is, you know, developmental delays. I mean, there was some research presented at one of our national meetings just last year that looked at kids who had access to iPhones starting at the age of 4 to 6 months. So again, just watching videos. And they were seeing higher rates of language delays in kids who had higher amounts of exposure to this. So reading is hugely important. I want Depesh to tell us about that because that's definitely something he's an ace with. But I'm fortunate too, having three daughters who all love to read and a house that's full of books, and we've always read a lot. So I think we can get away from it, but that's not the experience.
Yeah, I'm thinking about what Dr. Cook just said about can you, if you've got a child who's really seemingly addicted to screen time, can you take it away for 24 or 48 hours? Would that impact their mood, the way they treat others, their own perception that they could handle it? Or is it something that it's convenient, but they could go without it? And Dr. Navsaria, you know, to the extent that I know anything about our guests in studio and their kids, if they are all bookworms, if you are raising bookworms in the age of technology,
for
now,
the
you've
record,
done something
I hate
right.
To read, I hate reading. I hate it. So I don't know how she turned out that way.
Dr. Murray, don't say that.
Same here.
Oh, gosh. That hurts me physically. But if you're raising bookworms in this age of technology, you've done something really remarkable. And how much should we be concerned, Dr. Nafsaria, that this access to screens and this sometimes what appears to be addictive habit might actually also cut into reading and other skills?
Yeah, I think you've hit it on the head on the nail right there, because so much of the issues we see are displacement issues. You know, if anyone, an adult included, are spending a lot of time on digital devices, what aren't they doing with that time? You know, are they not reading? Are they not spending time outside? Are they not exercising? You know, these are all concerns that are about, not about the device themselves. Then there's the issue about the device themselves. And I do want to say, you know, I personally have a bit of a reaction when people use terms like addiction, because I think it's a very loaded term, and it's different from, you know, heroin or something like that. Yes, there are some studies looking at, you know, neurotransmitters in the brain and things like that. But what we're seeing is children pushing back because of something that they are habitually using, right? They're used to doing this. And let's also remember that the manufacturers of apps and devices and all, they are very specifically and intentionally looking to see how can I get people to stay on this? How can I make them wait for the next tweet? How can I make them stay on for the next level of the game and so on? So there's an intentionality that's been done to kind of keep children and to keep adults, for that matter, on these devices over and over. Is it the same as, you know, I don't want parents thinking, oh, my child is on their device all the time. They are addicted in the same way that if their child was using substances. I think there's a difference there that we don't need to add that level of shame and guilt, I think, to the job of parenting, and that's important. I will say, however, that, you know, reading is important. And for children to be able to do a deep dive into a book when they're a little older and able to read fluently, or to read together with their parent, does a few things. It allows them to think through concepts. It allows them to see narrative flow. And when they're reading together with a loving, caring adult in their lives, it helps build the social connections that we know drive development forward. You know, young children under age 3 don't actually develop skills from looking at screens. They develop from interaction with people. As one of our colleagues says, there is no app to replace your lap.
Yeah.
I love that. And this is where, you know, we occasionally talk pretty critically about the education system. Teachers are, especially elementary teachers, are working so hard with this and trying to balance the benefits of technology, because there are benefits of technology, to the pitfalls. And so here's a little shout out for my son's teachers, who've done such a wonderful job. His reading this year, the day that I realized that they had done so much was when he wasn't just reading Piggy and Gerald to me. He was reading with emphasis, and I'm going, wow, he's really understanding here, and he's so expressive. And I think teachers have a hard job. I think there's a lot to that. So we can hit this from different ways. Again, listeners, you want to call and join the conversation this hour about limits we need to set with technology, screen time in particular, with kids, with ourselves. It's 844-295-TALK, toll free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Common Sense Media finding 78% of teens check their phones at least hourly, and 50% report at least feeling addicted to their phones, though I'm going to follow Dr. Nafsaria's admonition, be a little careful with that term, but at least teenagers will tell you that they often feel addicted, like they can't give up their phones, or they have to constantly be checking. And there's a lot of different ways to go with this, but let's kind of close the loop a little bit on the Apple controls that the newer versions are going to set, or at least offer parents a chance to set. Dr. Cook, there's been some criticism on that. And so, for example, some shareholders have said that they want more of a control with screen time management, and it sounds like what Apple's going to offer is only two options, all on or all off. I don't know if that's exactly correct, but what do you make of what you've read so far on how these controls would work?
So it's very interesting. I've actually explored some of these apps and looked at them for myself and for my family and how to use these. And the one thing is some of these apps or even settings within your carrier service are observational. Like, you see how often they're on and how much they're on a certain site, but you can't necessarily control it. Or is it a device, is it an added type of app that maybe connects with a VPN network that actually allows you to set a time, like an allowance? Like, okay, you can start using it from 6 a.m. to 11 p.m., and you can have 4 hours of media use within that. And there's one app that I looked at specifically allows you to, like, give minutes for chores. So, like, washing the floor, 15 minutes, whatever. Or you can take them away, or you can shut it off. But at that web page, I looked at it, they were very proactive of being responsible parent, of saying, you have to talk to your kids about this, and you have to set those rules and set those guidelines up front. And it's very important if you're trying something like that, using it early. So the all on or all off is very difficult, because if people are, like, all off, then they're kind of passively giving up. If it's all on, you've got to go and look at that and walk through it and see what's there. And while they're trying to make things easier for us, I find that these are not easy for us to figure out. There's a lot of steps to this. And if you're a 23-year-old parent, maybe it's easier than a 42-year-old parent. Just saying.
So you think the iterations of this parental control from Apple are in the first stages, and we're going to get a little more specific as we go?
Like anything, there's upgrades. They'll get people using it, they'll get feedback, and they'll adjust it.
If you're wondering, by the way, where some of the criticism came from, we had previous conversations about so-called socially conscious investing. And to the cynics, look at this story. Again, I'm going to quote from NPR. Apple's announcement Monday follows pressure from activist shareholders to take the lead in developing controls to help parents limit iPhone use by teens and children. In January, JANA Partners and the California State Teachers Retirement System wrote letters to Apple about growing societal unease about overuse. They called upon Apple to take a stronger role in helping parents control their children's use of electronic devices. CalSTARS, which is the retirement system of California, and JANA combined owned about $2 billion in Apple stock, and they used that to pressure the company to make changes. So socially conscious investing appears, at least in this case, to have started that ball for Apple. And Tim Cook said the following in an interview on Monday with NPR. Quote, we have never been about maximizing the number of times you pick our devices up, the number of times you use them. All of these things are great conveniences of life. They change your daily life in a great way. But if you're being bombarded by notifications all day long, that's probably a use of the system that might not be so good anymore. End quote. Dr. Murray, are there, you know, is it important to point out the good ways we can use technology? I mean, do we need to not just sort of malign them in a blanket way here?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I was talking to a friend who said, I bought an antique encyclopedia the other day just so we could have one in our house, so my daughter could understand what it is. I mean, yes, there certainly are plenty of times where we're going to be online and we need to do things. But, you know, we have to pay attention to what is our metric. Is it really time on the device, or is it content on the device? That, you know, if you allow 30 minutes, that 30 minutes might be spent getting bullied. That's certainly not good. The overwhelming majority of the apps in the education section have zero data to support the fact that they are supposedly educational. You know, so we have lots of parents, especially we mentioned the 23-year-old parent, lots of young parents who very innocently are letting their younger children play with these supposed educational apps, thinking that they are actually doing something good for their child, perhaps making up for something that they see as a deficit in themselves. And that's just not the case. Kids need to actually hold the ball in their hands, not just look at a ball on a screen. They need to have a book read to them in real life and touch it, not just see it virtually.
Okay. And here's an email from a listener who says, why is it so hard for people to separate work and technology from home and screen-free time? There's a lot of things that are hard here. I think understanding where to draw lines and where we think technology is helping. Dr. Nafsaria, how do you start to at least differentiate for yourself and for your kids? This is the kind of use that shouldn't just be grouped in the stop doing it negative, you know, sort of junk food for the brain.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that we need to recognize that technology is a tool, it's an innovation, and we've had these throughout human history. I actually have great examples of quotes from ancient Greece, where great philosophers said that people would not learn anything and their brains would grow flabby and they wouldn't use their memories because of this thing that was invented called writing. Right. It was considered to be like cheating that how could you not memorize the great works, you know, that writing it down was not the same way. And you know, so we've been having these conversations throughout human history. This is the latest iteration of it is what it is. Now, granted, the pace of change is way faster than it has ever been, you know, and so on. But we've had these challenges and parents have had these challenges throughout. So I don't think it's so much of work and tech, work equals technology and home equals no technology. It's how do we use the technology? You know, we don't say this about paper. Paper can represent work. Paper can represent entertainment. Paper can represent education. It can represent all these things. And again, for me, it comes down to what is allowing the opportunity for parents and children to share time together, but also to have discussions about things. I've been using with my own family the on the iPhone the app sharing where when either of my kids want to download an app, they go to the App Store, they hit download, and what it does is it generates a request to me that I have to then approve. And much of the time, it's something that's straightforward. I'll just approve it. Even if I'm traveling, I can do it remotely. But sometimes I will send a text back to one of my kids and say, you know, can we talk about this tonight? You know, I just want to kind of talk about why you want this and why. And I listen to them and I talk about what my concerns are. And, you know, and then I may say yes or I may say no. It gives me an opportunity to have that conversation, to structure it, and to help them see what the things I'm thinking about are, what my values are, the values I hope they are receiving from this, and so on. So again, you can't just say, oh, we're going to just ban this, or we're going to stop this, or we're going to do this. I want them to learn how to do this themselves because I don't want them to become adults that suddenly are doing this on their own and they have no guidance, they have no idea what the principles are. You know, that's the whole, again, it's the whole job of parenting in so many ways. We're just extending it to this world.
On Twitter, Benjamin writes to us and says, I use an app called Moments to control both my and my kids' phones. I firmly believe they can lead to depression in teens as they view that as a connection in lieu of a physical connection. That would be wrong, in my opinion. So, concern about depression, Dr. Cook?
Yeah, there are lots of concerns of, you know, it's being on the internet and the consumption. There's so many questions with this, and there's growing observations of how people react to this. And of course, it will be individual. You have certain people, you know, who never get stressed by anything. You know, nothing bothers them. But you have other people who do. The interaction, especially teens, we've always had concerns about imagery to teens, and this is even more so. It's bombarding them, and it's not controlled. So you have to worry that, do they present, and they do, a fake imagery, a fake life, an imagery that's not supportive, and at the same time, they're delving into things that, you know, could get pretty dark. Maybe they're upset by stuff, and, you know, these algorithms for YouTube and other sites that seem to get them to the next phase. I mean, it's startling what we're learning over the past couple of years of how people have, you know, whether you consider it radicalization from a political standpoint or you just see people cycling in depression because you're interacting less with people. The glow of the screen and how the body reacts to that is not great. The fact that they're also doing this when they probably should be sleeping and getting good, you know, recovery of the body. There's a lot of concerns of how it affects kids. Again, not all kids, but of people, adults, kids, whoever, who might be more susceptible, could be very dangerous. And we have to step back and think about that.
Okay, Dr. Murray, you want to add to that?
Yeah, and I think we got to remember, too, that as parents, it's okay for us to make a mistake. And I think that presents an incredibly powerful teaching moment for kids. You know, whether it's reading a really goofy book to a little kid that's hard to pronounce and your child sees you kind of fumbling over it and it's silly, but it's you not being perfect because no human is perfect. But to have a kid see, like, all right, my parent doesn't quite get everything. You know, when it comes to technology, our kids right now are going to have the upper hand on us for a lot of people because they've literally had their whole life exposed to technology and we have not. And so they might have the upper hand on us. But if you are able to set the precedent right from the get-go of we're going to navigate this together. And you know what? I'm not going to always know the right answers, but I'm going to trust you to work with me, and we're going to work through this together. Just like, hey, I want to go away for a weekend with two of my friends and I'm only 15 years old. Well, why is that not going to work? I mean, there's all sorts of other examples of how we navigate tricky things with our kids. But for some reason, we have this kind of stigma when it comes to technology. We get upset if somebody's at the park looking at their phone, but if they were at the park reading a newspaper, I don't really think anybody would care as much. And so we need to kind of work through all of that. You know, I see kids who hide apps from their parents all of the time. You know, they're coming in, they've attempted suicide. What's going on? I got a text or I found out about this. How did you figure? And I just kind of use it as a teaching way. How did you find out about this? Walk me through it. And they'll show me all the stuff on their phone, and their parents will say, "What? Where did that? What app is that? Where did that come from?" And it all comes out because we're in crisis.
Dr. Cook's nodding. Dr. Nafsaria, sounds like you want to jump in. Go ahead.
Yeah, and I was going to say that again. I mean, something I remind teens that I see in the clinic and that I remind my own kids of is that when you look at social media or blog posts or whatever, people are generally giving you the highlight reel of their life, right? They're showing you these things. It's not necessarily the totality of your life. You know, you don't always tell people about the bad days or the things that are frustrating or the ways you feel inadequate or things like that. So it's easy to feel like, wow, everyone else does things perfectly or everyone does this or everyone thinks this way when, of course, human beings are much more complex. So again, having that connection with someone to point out that perspective and say, you know, don't just sit there and watch the highlights reel of other people's lives and think that that's what their entire life is like is an important perspective to have.
Dr. Cook, you want to add to some of that? Go ahead.
It's extremely important what he said. We're getting the highlights, and it's mispresented as, you know, reality TV. No, it's staged. It's scripted. It all is.
And it becomes pretty competitive, I imagine.
Exactly.
So we are going to take our only break, and when we come back, Anna emails the program and says, great discussion, but get specific. How much time should we be allowing kids on screens? And what are the guidelines now? So, Anna, we're going to let our guests respond to that get specific question after our only break of the hour right here on Connections. In studio with us, we have pediatricians from Golisano Children's Hospital, Drs. Elizabeth Murray and Steve Cook, and on the line with us, Dr. Dipesh Nafsaria, Associate Professor of Pediatrics at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. More on screen time, us, and our kids next on Connections. And let me tell you what's coming up Monday on the next Connections. What do you know about the New York Health Act? We're going to discuss the bill that could bring single-payer health care to New York State. We're going to hear from people on both sides of that issue. It's a bill that always passes the Assembly, usually falls a little short in the Senate. We'll tell you where it stands and what you can expect with that on Monday. Then in our second hour, author Peter Loebenheim joins us in studio discussing his new book, The Attachment Effect, a look at how early childhood affects our adult relationships. This is Connections. Hope you're having a nice Friday afternoon. And we're talking about a number of things related to screen time for us and our children. As NPR reported earlier this week, Apple is looking at software technology in its newest editions that will be forthcoming that would allow parents more control to stop screen usage for themselves, for their kids, and allowing a little bit more of a way to kind of put an off switch there if you think it's too much for your kids. So we're talking about that. And then to Anna's email about getting specific, this is a good time to bring in a conversation about the Family Media Use Plan, which is what, Dr. Murray?
So a few years ago, the American Academy of Pediatrics decided, well, we're making all these guidelines for people and making all these suggestions. Let's see if we can come up with an easier way to navigate it. Plus, remind everybody of the importance of family technology use is important. Parents, what they're doing and what they're modeling to their kids is certainly going to be very important, and understand that family dynamics have kids of different ages and different experiences, and so we have to bring it together and figure out what's going to work best for the family unit. So it's an online resource that you can find if you just Google AAP Family Media Use Plan, and it goes through a bunch of different questions. It kind of sets the clock with some assumptions, but it lets you go through how much time is spent sleeping for this individual in your family. When are they at school? What are they doing? What are the family expectations? So you can kind of balance out your day.
All right.
And then you can do it person by person.
And what does that mean now? So if Anna is emailing you and says, I need some specifics for my kids, what's too much? Give me a number.
Well, again, if you're losing out on other things, so all day is too much. I worry more on content than I do about time and what you need to do as a family, understanding that every single day is not going to be the same, just like you're not going to eat all your fruits and vegetables every single day. Over the course of the week, it's going to balance out. So I think that's a better way of looking at it, kind of over a longer period of time. If you're younger than two, you do not need to be doing any type of technology other than what is truly social for interacting with family. Grandparents live out of time and you're out of town and you're Skyping. Totally reasonable to have that interpersonal connection with them. But beyond that, it's going to be limited to an hour to two a day. And then understanding older kids are doing schoolwork, that has to be counted into it. But it's a little bit differently, again, because it is schoolwork. They're obviously getting something out of it, educational, hopefully.
Okay. Dr. Cook?
Yeah, Liz really hit on the points because people say, well, how much time? And I tell them, listen, under two, they don't need it. If you want to Skype or FaceTime or something with family members far away, that's great. Two and older, maybe an hour or two, but be interactive and choose good quality material. You know, sorry if it's a plug, but the PBS app for kids, that's a really good quality type of app for parents to interact with. I tell them YouTube, despite having a YouTube family channel or kids channel, is not that well regulated, and inappropriate content pops up pretty regularly. You cannot just leave that there and leave a child unattended with it, like anything. So when they start getting into school, you do have to be aware that there may be some assignments, things like that. I've noticed that with my family, you know, at junior high, high school, and that makes it really tough because then you have a child who now, in order to do their homework, they need to be on a computer, and they're getting information through the computer or they're using an app with their class on an assignment. So then it's like, all right, are you doing your homework? Yeah, but they're also Snapchatting someone, and they're doing three or four things. And so they adapt to this very quickly because it's just how they grow up with it. It's like swimming and breathing. It's just what they do. And as a parent who didn't grow up with that and sat down and did homework and we got to do a group assignment, okay, we'll meet at the library or whatever, it's very different. So there are complicated levels. So there kind of is some time, but there's definitely content specific material. And like anything, you need to be with the child. It's not easy. But when I tell parents, you know, under two, they don't need it at all, zero. Some parents really look at me and I'm like, you know, show me what's bad about that, please.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want to say the reason Steve and I would say we are in favor of the PBS stuff and then the Sesame Street workshop is because those are corporations that study it and release their data. So talk about corporate responsibility. They're willing to actually look at their content and share their data to doctors and to researchers. And that's what I think is just so incredibly important. There's very few app producers and things like that out there who will do that.
Yeah, there was an interesting series of videos, and I'm trying to remember, I believe it was the Baby Einstein videos, that initially the woman who made them, they were great and kids could watch them, and then I believe they sold the rights to Disney or someone, and then some independent pediatricians actually looked at them and tried to do a study on them. Disney sued the journal to prevent them from publishing the fact that these videos did not show any developmental benefit to the children.
Yeah, what was interesting with Baby Einstein was that the, you know, young children actually don't gravitate towards screen. By young, I mean, you know, under 18 months of age. So people then said, well, but I put Baby Einstein on and my young child watches. What Baby Einstein does is it does a scene change every 4 or 5 seconds. It uses motion and bright colors to keep the child looking, but they're not learning anything. And again, it's displacing that interaction and back and forth with a live human that does actually benefit them. So yeah, I think it's so clear with all of this, young children do not benefit from screens. The research on that is actually very good. And I think parents need to hear that there is no proven benefit to that. When the child's older, yeah, it becomes more complicated. What's educational, what isn't, and so on. And I think those media use plans that the AAP has created are really marvelous because, one, it talks about some of the time issues and lets you even sort out as a family, like, gee, there's not all that much time left in the day once you've done school and eating and bathing and, you know, all those sorts of things that should happen. But then the other part of the plan that's really helpful is allowing you to create a family media plan. It has suggested things to talk about as a family and possible rules. And the family picks. This is not anyone telling you do this or do that for sure. But I sat down and did these with both my kids individually, and it gave us a chance, again, to talk about the why. Why do we have this rule? Why are we setting this limit? What's there? and then to print it off, and we had everything in writing. So if the rules are violated, then it's like, well, look, this is what we agreed on.
All right, so I've got a few other emails I want to get to in just a moment, but before we do that, you know, Anna was asking for something more specific. You're not really getting it. You're not getting a 1 hour or 2 hours a day or nothing past 8 p.m., but I do think of my own childhood when there wasn't mobile phones, but there was video games, you know, becoming more popular. And I loved the Might and Magic series of role-playing games that took forever to figure out and solve these games. So it took a long time, and my mother set real pretty hard and firm limits on how much time. And I'm like, Mom, I'm not going to beat this game with these limits. And she's like, too bad. And I look back, and you know what I became? I became someone who was not addicted to video games. Now, again, I'm going to use that term. I'm going to use a different term. I wasn't overly... I wasn't spending the majority of my waking hours on video games. I wasn't allowed to. I liked them. I did some. But I didn't do it too much. And I now look back and I'm like, I'm so thankful that my mother said no. I go back to the beginning of the hour and Dr. Murray saying it's okay to say no. And my mother said no to me. She set those hard limits and I definitely benefited from that. Now, I don't know if parents feel pressure because kids will say, well, my friends are doing this or other parents are allowing this, et cetera, et cetera. But is it wise to set limits, whether it's whatever time you decide for the screen? So, Anna, we're not going to give you a single set time, but you can decide. But also for hours of the day or places, you know, Dr. Napsari mentioned not in the bedroom. What do you think? Well, let's go around the table. Liz?
Yeah, so hard and fast rules of family meal time is family meal time.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's an emergency, you know, when my husband or I are on call, yes, sometimes we have to step away from the table to take a phone call. But that's a clear expectation that we've made amongst the family. Bedtime is bedtime, and the lights have to be off, and the screens have to be off and out of the room, and those types of things as well. And then, obviously, if there's other family important family things, like I've got a rule of nothing in the car, you know, can I bring my iPod in the car? Well, no, we're driving for 4 minutes. No. You know, versus a trip. So then when the trip comes along, it's something exciting and different and more fun to do. So for us, those are the hard and fast rules. But again, I think that sometimes we just have to remember you do have to have some flexibility in there because different scenarios are going to present themselves. And to hear your child out is so important because there might be a lot more to the story. There might be a social dynamic concern that the child really feels that they need to have access to something for a reason that's just nowhere in your consciousness, but in the young child's brain, they're very, very focused on it. And then that allows you to have that discussion about what the real issue is.
Steve?
So we have some similar rules. Before they got the phone, we had to sit down and talk about it. Never in the bedroom, never at the kitchen table, always plugged in and charging overnight in the kitchen. You know, not in the car in the front seat, you know, at times, you know, but even short trips and stuff, we'll ask him not to do that. You know, just, you know, put the phone away or something else. But understanding that, it alters sleep. It screws up some of their habits. Wait till 8 is a kind of a movement that I've heard and a pledge. And 8 isn't 8 years old. It's 8th grade. So wait till 8 before a kid actually gets a phone. And I have to say that it's something that, you know, you take it for granted because they put their friends in their contact lists and stuff. And I asked my daughter one time to use her phone. Oh, call your grandmother. How do I do that? She didn't know how to actually dial the number because she didn't know the number and wasn't in her contact list. So, I mean, these things are not phones. These are supercomputers, essentially, is what they are. And it's unlimited access to information that if you take the time ahead of time before you get a phone, look at the parent restrictions that you can set up on that stuff. There's a lot of things you can do, but if you let it go out unfiltered, you're going to have a lot of dialing back stuff that's going to be hard to do.
Okay, Dr. Nafsaria?
Yeah, you know, I think, again, coming back to the specifics, going to the AAP's Family Media Plan website will provide a lot of that specifics that I think a lot of the listeners are probably looking for.
Yep, yep.
And because, again, it is age-based and it does matter. And, again, it's not even so much about number of hours. It's about what are they doing and what's happening over time. I don't think it's terrible for, you know, a child to watch something that has no redeeming educational value for an hour. You know, it's not going to permanently alter them. It's the issue of what happens when that's a daily habit, day after day after day after day, and that becomes a concern really over time. The other thing I'll also say that's related to that is that, again, as we've said multiple times, parenting is difficult. Parenting is hard. Sometimes you need your child to be in front of a screen somewhere safe where while you are putting on the laundry or taking a shower or making dinner or things like that. You know, I don't think a parent should feel guilty that they're occasionally having to do that just in order to kind of get through life, particularly when we have families that are particularly stressed in terms of their own resources and time and so on, and maybe their child can't play outside because it's too dangerous. I mean, we have to be aware of these realities and not just be pat about, well, you just shouldn't do this and make people feel ashamed. We all struggle with these. I think all of us here in the studio have struggled as parents with, you know, trying to juggle a busy work lives and so on and screen issues at the same time.
All right, let me get some more listener feedback. And we've got Dr. Dave Topa on the line with us as well here. Everyone's excited to hear from another doctor. Hi, Dave.
Hello, everyone. How are you doing today?
Good.
Good. So excited you guys are talking about this. I just got in the car and turned on the radio, and I got excited about the topic because I'm spending a lot of time in the office telling parents really to be their first role model for their kids. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've asked parents to get off the phone while they're in the office with their child's well visit. And, you know, we like to laugh at those teenagers who sit next to each other and text each other and don't talk. But yet, if you go to any playground, what are the parents doing, right? And then they're all on their phones, right, in Facebook or email. So, parents have to realize they are the first teacher of their children. And then I've actually seen a trend where I think phones are replacing pacifiers, where anytime a child under the age of 2 or 3 starts getting antsy, the parent's first response seems to be, okay, let's pull up a video of Elmo on the phone. And I just worry that I tell the parents that they're just, they're reinforcing that urge of, or that the lesson there is that when I get bored, I go to a screen. And then it's really something that, I think we're trying to break out in the primary care world, but it's tricky to do.
It is tricky. I'm trying to get better myself. Dave, such good stuff. Thanks for calling the program, Dr. Topa.
Thank you.
As always, and model, right, guys? Be the model for your kids.
Definitely. And one thing we were able to do, too, is the device that our children use, it's an older version of an iPhone. So it's not an active phone, but it's also a distinct device. Like, I don't think my 2-year-old associates my active working phone with that device that she plays her little songs that she likes on. So, you know, you have a little bit of cognitive separation there, which I think can be very, very helpful. Of, it's not something we always have with us, and it's very different than the thing that I use.
Really good stuff.
And again, it's all about messaging. I was on a trip with my son, and I was briefly checking email before we were having lunch, and something came in that I had to get some important information to someone about a grant that was due, and I was the only person who could do it. And I explained to my son, I said, I'm going to take 10 minutes here. I need to tap this message out. It's really important. It's about a grant. And just give me a moment here. I did it and then put the phone away. And I explained to him, look, I'm placing a value on this for a very specific reason, but it's only going to be 10 minutes. And then, you have my full attention again. It's how we model it.
Really good. Really good stuff there. And something that I'm going to take with me, Dr. Nafsari, because there are times where, you know, a guest cancels or something happens or we're trying to book something or I'm trying to respond. And I don't want it to be the overemphasis. So I'm trying to get it done quickly. But my son will see me doing it. He may not know what I'm doing it. So what you're saying is be explicit. Tell them, I don't want to be on my screen very long. I've got to handle this. It's work related. When it's done, you've got my attention. I'm going to follow that model. That's really, really good stuff. Kara writes to the program and says, I want to agree on the idea of its quality and not just quantity of screen time. She says, I have an almost 3-year-old, and I find a lot of the content targeted at his age group isn't just non-educational, but crafted in such a way to be purposefully overstimulating. And she's thinking of Paw Patrol, PJ Masks, popular shows like that. She says, personally, we're big fans of the PBS app, too, in our house. It's been a delight sharing shows we grew up with, namely Mr. Rogers, with our son. It's new to him and nostalgic for us. Thank you, Kara. Dr. Nafsaria?
Yeah, and I just want to say that exactly, and it's not even just designed to be like keeping kids looking at them. They're also designed to market, right? The corporations will specifically say, oh, if I can get this child looking at this licensed character and they'll be familiar, now we can sell them a backpack that's maybe worth $5 by putting this logo on them. And, you know, one of the organizations that I'm actually in Boston as we speak right now for a meeting of that I'm on the board of is the Campaign for a Commercial-Free Childhood. We are specifically calling out marketing to children and these sorts of egregious examples that go on of basically trying to get children to turn into good consumers at this young age through the use of, in particular, media and technology.
That was me applauding. I thought for a while it was illegal for parents not to buy things from Paw Patrol. And so, you know, there was just a, and then I found out you actually could just not do that. I didn't know. No, every holiday season, Paw Patrol has a new line. It's the same characters, or sometimes it's a new pup. And look, there are times, I don't want to be a big cynic. I mean, my son liked Paw Patrol, but you see how quickly it becomes about getting the next toy or the next thing, and nothing about that culture I appreciated. Nothing. So thank you, Dr. Nafsaria, for the work that you do for a commercial-free childhood, from myself and many other parents. And we're almost out of time here. Dr. Nafsaria, is that kind of campaign online if parents want to learn more about that, by the way?
Yes. If you go to www.commercialfree.org, and commercialfreechildhood.org, and all the materials there about the work, they actually do a combination of the marketing to children work as well as the screen work. They're the people who now own Screen Free Week, which used to be TV Turnoff Week years ago. A lot of excellent folks thinking really deeply about this and trying to make sure.
Well, you know what? I'm picking up my boy in 20 minutes, and we're going outside. Going outside. Dr. Nafsaria, thanks for taking the time for us this hour. Really greatly appreciated your insight.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And pediatricians, doctors Elizabeth Murray and Steve Cook from Golisano Children's Hospital. Always good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm going to spend as much time outside as I can. Dr. Cook, when you feel even better, I hope you can as well. Thank you.
I will be outside.
Thank you very, very much.
Check the weather on your app first.
Use sunblock if it's super sunny.
They're going to keep going. They're the best. They're the best. Our thanks to John Andrus, engineer, Megan Mack, producer. Hope you do have a wonderful weekend wherever you are. And join us Monday on member-supported public radio.